Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 188 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltek. Thanks for joining me again in this mega episode. As you know, the 2025 Canadian federal election is over. We have a winner. So we're going to cover everything that's gone on through the campaign and the election itself. We're going to look at a lot of these moving parts that are now in play for gun owners and how they may affect us. We're also going to talk about where do we go from here as far as the CCFR is concerned. What did we do and where do we go from here, which is really important. It's what's occupied my mind for the past 48 plus hours. And we're going to bring Tracy on as soon as we come back because we have a lot to cover. Anyway, all that and more, the CCFR Radio Podcast starts right now. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR. Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Ready, Aim, Shop. Bullseye North is where passion meets precision. Discover a huge selection of top-notch rifles, accessories, and ammo. Whether you're perfecting your aim at the range or gearing up for hunting season, Bullseye North has you covered with free shipping on orders over $300, including ammo. Some exclusions apply. Check out bullseyenorth.com and remember to subscribe to their newsletter, bullseyenorth.com. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. All right, via Skype for at least for now. Skype's actually being discontinued, but via Skype, we've got Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson.
Okay, that is not how you greet me when I come in the room usually, but I'm with you. I really was hoping that we would be having a very different conversation today than what we're going to be having. However, this is our battle space and we just got to keep going. We have no alternative because giving up has never been an option for the CCFR.
Well, this is true. And, you know, just we were going to talk about this sort of at the end of this whole thing. But we may want to give, our audience here a little dose of it in the beginning. When we got the election results, we'll talk about those in a second. You know, that was just like, man, after 10 years of a liberal government, it's, you know, we were hoping for a change. I think a lot of people were, at least half the country was. And it's very disappointing. And so I was, you know, quiet for a day or two. I just needed to reflect a little. Because it's tough, right? We've had a lot of setbacks over 10 years and we were hoping for a change and we didn't get it. But we're going to go through the political aspects of what's going on right now, where the opportunities are, where the fights are, the challenges are and stuff. But, you know, we're actually going to have an encouraging message for you today. So anyway, as bad as it looks, I think by the time we get to the end, people will realize that there's still a fight to be had and we don't control everything in the political system in Canada or the government or whatever. But what we do control is whether or not we continue to fight these people and make life difficult for them.
Yeah. I mean, I admit I've spent the last couple of days dooming and, you know, last night I sort of decided like, look, our only option is to either fight or give up. And I'm not ready to give up on the country or gun owners. And I hope they're not ready to give up on us. So that's it.
Yeah, well, there you go. There's a little bit of an encouraging message and it'll get brighter. It'll get darker before it gets brighter, but let's start. Let's figure out what has all happened in the last 3 or 4 days.
Well, it's been a disaster, but it was an election. It was quite a campaign. The Liberals ended up basically where they were before with a minority government. So there's a mandate there, but it's not a very strong or clear mandate from Canadians. Less than 2% divided the popular vote between the conservatives and the liberals. The conservatives upped their number of seats in the House of Commons by 24. So they're sitting at 144 seats. And the polling was good. A lot of people talk about, you know, blowing this big lead that the conservatives had. And they didn't blow anything because they ended up, the result they got in the percentage of the votes was pretty much static the entire time that they've been polling really high. The problem is we had a complete collapse of the NDP, the Bloc, the Green, basically everybody else. So, yeah, it ended up, it gave the Liberals back a minority government. However, they do have a new leader, and we've got a new Prime Minister, Mark Carney. So we'll see how that goes. But the good news is there was a historic high number of people, 7.2 million, that got out and voted in the advance polls, which is great. The bad news is 32% of eligible Canadian voters did not show up. So take that as it is. But yeah, it was a pretty interesting election with some very disappointing results.
Well, if you think about that, 32% didn't show up. So who got to make the decision on the direction of the country? The people that showed up.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
Again, you look at that and you're like, yeah, the history is made by those who show up. And 68.65% did. So I guess that's good. But
yeah, that's good.
But it was interesting. Yeah, the NDP, you know, I think everyone's been criticizing Jagmeet Singh for years and years, and for a very good reason. And it's interesting, if you remember a few election cycles ago, just after the resignation of Jack Layton, the NDP, I forget how many seats they, I don't know if we, you or I looked it up, but they had like, they were the official opposition for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They had like 60 or 80 seats, which was the highest they had had in the history of the party, down to 7 seats under Jagmeet Singh.
Like they fit in one vehicle, the entire party.
Yeah.
They can fit in one vehicle now.
Literally.
And they lost their leader.
Yeah. If you got like a Durango or something, a 7-seater, your whole party fits in there.
Oh, boy.
The Durango
the
party.
NDP, well, in the 2021 election, they got 25 seats. But yeah, they're down to 7. The leader lost his. Jagmeet came in third place in his riding and, of course, immediately resigned. The Bloc Québécois, last time they had 32 seats. This time they had 22. Their leader escaped unscathed. The Green only had 2 seats to begin with. They lost the other one. Elizabeth May kept hers. But they had, I don't know if you remember, they had co-leaders. They kind of had 2 guys. So the other guy lost his seat and he's gone too. He resigned today. So
what you're saying is the results of the election is the Greens lost half of their seats.
Basically, the Greens lost 50% of their seats in the House of Commons. Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know why they exist, but yeah, it is what it is. Okay. Well, I think... So that's the situation that we're faced with. There is a liberal minority government. The conservatives have improved their standing substantially, which of course is not enough to turn back the clock for gun owners. But we don't know what the future is going to look like. Why don't we talk about the kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly as far as this election is concerned?
There were some people that won seats, and not that I was surprised because they were polling well and they ran great campaigns, but I know that the left kind of hates it, right? So I will go through the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the good is Andrew Lawton, Aaron Gunn, Roman Baber, and Chief Billy Morin all won their seats, which is great. So I'm really happy to see that. The bad is Michelle Ferrari lost hers. Tracy Gray, Rick Perkins, who's just an awesome MP. Yep. And of course, Emily Brown lost her riding as well. That is the bad. Now, the ugly part is CPC leader Pierre Poilievre also lost his seat. And a lot of people were surprised by this, and so was I. But, you know, I live here in Ottawa. I live in a neighboring riding to Pierre's riding of Carleton. And there was a lot of changes recently. You'll remember a while back, Elections Canada sort of rejigged a lot of the ridings. They added, we went from 338 seats to 343. So they added some seats and they changed the boundary lines for a lot of these ridings. And Pierre's was one of those. So it became much less rural. I think before it's sort of this really nice, quiet, rural, edge of town type riding. And it became a lot more urban and a lot more people in it, of course. And then I'll give credit where it's due. Fanjoy, Bruce Fanjoy, in that riding for the Liberals, he's had 3 years and a massive ground game. He's knocked on tens of thousands of doors. And yeah, I mean, overall, I would say Pierce had massive national success, a message that resonated with Canadians. He was strong on our file. Even law enforcement were out supporting him. Like, it's going to be up to caucus, I suppose. But personally, I would vote to keep Poilievre. I think he did a great job.
Well, you and I were talking about this before we got started. It's, you know, if Poilievre would have won, if the Conservatives would have won and Poilievre led them to victory, then everyone would have said, oh, you know, maybe there's a couple of things I would have done different, but you know what? He's the hero of the day because he was edged out by, I don't know, whatever, 500,000 votes across the country, 150,000. I don't know. I didn't look at that. But, you know, there were so many ridings where it was so close. It was within hundreds of votes. Had he edged out, nobody really would have anything bad to say, but they didn't make it. So now you have people criticizing. And it's like, yeah, you know, could he have said different things at different times? Absolutely. Could have he been a little stronger on something and a little more moderate on other things? Probably. But he raised their base 7%. He got the most votes any Conservative Party leader has gotten since 1980. Like, it's hard to say someone nailed it when they didn't win.
It really is. And you got to think about how long this has been going on. I mean, he's held over 180 rallies across the country. And look at the people that turned out for those during the election. Like, we're talking thousands of people.
Record setting.
Like, I've been to a couple of those. And I have to tell you, it was almost better than a rock concert. Like, it was really electric, really huge momentum. So, you know, what's in the future for him? There's a couple of different routes that you can go. I know, you know, if you look through history, it's happened to multiple prime ministers, Jean Chrétien. There was a whole list I was reading this morning. I just can't think of them off the top of my head, but it's, you know, there's things that the party can do. They can kind of float them into a sure thing riding. I don't know. I got mixed feelings about all those things, but yeah, I just think it was an amazing campaign overall. And if it wasn't for the complete collapse of the other parties, I think it would be a very different day today. So
yeah, I think so too. And the thing is, Pierre Poilievre, I'll credit him for this. Holy smokes, did he work!
Like, oh my God.
I know what it is to travel for a living. I know what it is to always be on. I mean, I wasn't doing any rallies with, you know, 13, 14,000 people at them, but just back-to-back meetings all day or whatever. And for me, I get sick and tired of that so fast. I'll do that for 2 weeks or whatever. And that's it. I'm like, I need to decompress. I'm going to lose my mind or whatever. This guy went for years nonstop, and both doing his job as an MP and going to rallies across the country and just being shuttled everywhere. Like, he worked really, really hard. So I really don't have too much to criticize Pierre Poilievre. He did a really good job overall.
Yeah. I mean, I wish the outcome was different, but I can't see there would be a whole lot that I can pick on in that campaign. And, you know, if I could pick on one thing, I think it would be, it's very difficult. The leader doesn't usually spend very much time in their own riding, of course, because they're on the national circuit. And that stands true for no matter what party you're in. But yeah, I think it was very difficult to compete with a guy who had 3 years and enormous resources by the Liberal Party and their people to do that, you know, that ground game in the riding itself. So yeah, just a really twisted, messed up results. So
yeah. But it's, you know, it's there's still, oh, I was, that was the thing. It was, something was needling me. As far as the good is concerned, there's one name I just wanted to float out there, which is Ellis Ross, one on Vancouver Island.
Yes.
And Ellis Ross is a true Indigenous leader, the real deal. So I'm really glad that Ellis Ross ran in his riding and that he won. Well-deserved. So
yeah, there'll be a lot of nice new faces in the House, so it should be interesting. And I think I was reading this morning, I think the Prime Minister's going to recall Parliament in a couple of weeks, and we'll be off to the races. And of course, they haven't sat since December 14th, right? So
yeah,
there's whole seasons have passed.
They're going to have to dust the main chamber there in the House of Commons. Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, it's probably all dusty and people haven't gone in there. Yeah. It's all musty. They have to turn the air conditioning back on.
Yeah,
you know?
Probably.
Anyway, the other thing I just, you know, just for my own observations, I just want to share one with you. I think this this election itself was a testament to the power still or the grip on the Canadian consciousness of the mainstream media. The Liberals ran a fear-based campaign. The media ignored so many things that could have been exploited by the media. Of course, they nitpicked everyone else. And they just glossed over some of the most important aspects of this entire election in favor of the Liberal platform. And, you know, it's easy for people to say, oh, they got in the tank for Carney and all the rest of that stuff. But if you look and you're fair, right? Because I don't watch everything on CBC. It's like, oh, they're in the tank for the Liberals. It's like, no, it's a lot more subtle than that. Sometimes not so subtle, but mostly actually a lot more subtle. But if you actually watch for things, man, they, I don't know, they made all the difference. And I was talking to somebody and they're like, I think they were underestimating the role of the mainstream media in this election, especially when you saw how the polling was going. I don't think it can be underestimated because, and their motivation as well, because I was chatting with somebody about it and they're like, well, do you think it's really that biased? I'm like, listen, man, the mainstream media have been in decline. Their revenues are in sharp decline for a long time. Here comes the Trudeau Liberals. They're like, okay, we'll give you $2/3 billion to keep you floating. And what happens is when you subsidize an industry that much, think of it in terms of a small business. Imagine your business is failing. Like you will not be able to continue. You get a government subsidy. And now you've gone, you know, whatever, right? 5-6 years. And that's now just part of your business model. So all your revenue probably pays for your overhead. And the only profit you get is probably that subsidy. Well, that's the existential threat that removing that funding represents to the mainstream media. People are literally fighting for their jobs. And the only way they get to keep their jobs is if the Liberal Party are still in power. Now, tell me how that's not going to bias you.
Well, so it does.
They were able to push, you know, the Liberals' agenda. They were able to keep focused on the things that were important to the Liberal Party platform, because I watched all that stuff. And they were able to convince enough people to vote Liberal despite the record of the last 10 years and everyone except the leader being exactly the same people that brought us to this point in 10 years. So anyway, they still do hold a bit of power there. I just want to mention that as an observation.
Well, you and I were looking at some of, one of those charts with the election issues for people. And it was interesting because reducing the cost of living was the most important election issue to every demographic except the 60 plus. And theirs, of course, was Trump. And, you know, you get a lot of these, a lot of social media chatter blaming boomers for, you know, this Trump stuff, but it's right in the chart. Stuff like making the country a better place to live, barely even ranked. You know, of course, gun control didn't really even show up at this election, I think, aside from Provost winning her seat, of course. But I don't know. It's interesting because that's the biggest fear. And that's the problem is we will still have the same problems we had before after Trump comes and goes, should he lose the next election. So,
yeah,
just a weird place, you know.
It is interesting, though, how dealing with Donald Trump is the most important thing to the 60 plus. Like it that doesn't happen by itself. That happens with people that watch mainstream media, news, opinion, commentary, stuff like that nonstop. And like, if you look at that stuff, it fills in all the blanks for you. What really
it totally
went,
does.
Yeah. What really went on there. Anyway, so one of the things, so I guess we're sort of moving towards, okay, what are the silver linings in this thing? Like, what do we do now? Where, how are we going to move forward? Cause that's a question that was on my mind day and night for the last 48 hours. Cause obviously we need to figure out what is it, what do we, what's, what does the fight look like and how do we respond to it? Cause again, as we said, when we started, you know, not just sitting back and just watching it all unfold is not, it's not an option. And of course, we're not a group that's just like, we are not giving up. We're into the fight for the long term. You know, we're really going to double our efforts. Like that stuff, that kind of dialogue is absolutely meaningless.
It's useless.
What exactly are you going to do? Right. You know, so in the real world. So anyway, one of the things that we're going to do a bunch of things, we're going to talk about it. But one of the things that's interesting, the only thing that's really changed about the Liberal Party is its leader. And that leader is very, very different than Justin Trudeau. Justin Trudeau, everything was driven by ideology. Everything was driven by popularity. You know, he's very different. Now you have Mark Carney. We all have our opinions and our thoughts, especially about Mark Carney's past and what he's even doing. We don't even know if he's still, if he's given up what he was doing before he ran for prime minister. Like, we don't know any of that stuff. But this guy is a business guy. He's an economist, as it were, to some degree, even though, you know, like central bank is not 100% economist driven, but it's more policy, a policy think tank. But, and also has advertised himself as a pragmatist. But I will say one thing about Carney, he's not going to be intimidated by anybody in the party and their personal agenda. He's not a guy that you can intimidate or scare. Like, your popularity is going to go down if you do this. Right. So there are groups in Canada that were, that had a lot of success bossing Trudeau around, where they probably won't have that level of success trying to boss Carney around. He's far stronger. So anyway, for this next part, and this is where we start to get optimistic and talk about what our plan is going forward. This, to start this off, I'm just going to play a clip of Carney's victory speech because it's important. And we're going to have to test whether or not it's genuine. Anyway, check it out.
Over my long career, I have made many mistakes, and I will make more. But I commit to admitting them openly, to correcting them quickly, and always learning from them. Millions of our fellow citizens preferred a different outcome. And my message to every Canadian is this: no matter where you live, no matter what language you speak, no matter how you voted, I will always do my best to represent everyone who calls Canada home. As we come here after this consequential, most consequential election, let's put an end to the division and anger of the past.
You know, I don't know Mark Carney. I've never actually met him. But that sounded very positive to me. Now, whether or not it's true, I guess we're going to have to put that to the test. So, yeah, I think there is a lot of opportunity there. We have no choice but to take him at his word, and therefore we must move forward with it.
Yeah. So I did take an opportunity to put together a two-pager, figure out what our plan was going forward. So we have a direction. We have things to do. We have things to try. One of them, as you just said, we're going to put that to the test, whether or not he's genuine about everyone having a seat at that table, because what if he is? We don't know. And, you know, people, it's funny because we had to, our position evolved based on the political situation that gun owners were facing and, you know, based on how we would use our resources, whatever. And part of that included a huge get out the vote campaign. We'll talk about that later. We've already talked about that with you, but in case you hadn't heard what we did, we're going to cover that in a bit. But also mainstream media, like nightly news attack ads against the Liberals. And people have been like, why are you getting so political? You know, how are you ever going to talk to the Liberals? Like, the Liberals run attack ads. The liberals have been slandering us and spreading false rumors and all the rest of that stuff the whole time. This is just how that game is played. They understand that. We understand that, right? So when the time comes, we will reach out to the liberals. We'll acknowledge, hey, we've both, engaged in political assassination against each other. We understand the game, but now people need you guys to lead, and gun owners need us to communicate with you and figure out, you know, how anyone's going to move forward. So we intend to do that. So we will be reaching out to the liberals and seeing, putting to the test their new leaders' ideology or leadership skills.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and it's interesting. We're not the only ones having this conversation. I was listening to the radio and on the Evan Bray show, he had Gormley on there and a bunch of other guests, like a political panel. And they were talking about how Mark Carney is going to want to distance himself from some of those Trudeau era policies. And Evan asked, you know, what do you think he could do to sort of really show a divide between him and Trudeau, that he's a different leader, it's a different party, and it's a different mandate going forward? And that was Gormley's response, is, you know, cut out all this gun stuff. I mean, first of all, as a guy who's supposed to be super pragmatic and an economist, how can he even justify spending billions of dollars messing around with gun owners when the evidence is pretty clear it's not going to do anything? But also just the division that it causes amongst Canadians, right? For what? So that was Gormley's suggestion. So I second that emotion.
Well, you never know. And, you know, something that we didn't mention before is this is a minority government. And even if they get some cooperation from the NDP, I mean, there could be NDP that crossed the floor, which could give them a majority, but we don't know. Those NDP members could be like, I don't want to contribute to the extinguishment of the NDP. So they may not do that, because that would be the end of the party altogether.
Oh, it has to be.
But they may say, hey, you know what? We see where all this, where Jagmeet style of just basically having zero integrity, zero credibility, just to stay in power to get a pension or to get something in our platform, that didn't work. Our party is destroyed. They might be like, no, we're going to stand up against Carney and we're going to withhold that cooperation. There's still the block and everything, but there's a lot of moving parts here, I think is what I'm trying to say. So, you know, we've been talking about this to talk about the direction of the CCFR. What work is there to do now in the situation that we're in now? And it's important that you understand that. So we're going to try to get a seat at that table. We'll put Mark Carney's credibility between what he says and what he does, we're going to put that to the test, because, you know, we're ready to work, and we'll see if they are too. Mm-hmm. We're also going to get back to some of our roots at the CCFR, because now that this election is over, there's not going to be another one for probably 2 years, if not longer, but hopefully a year and a half to 2 years. We don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to take that one step at a time. But we're going to get back to the public education, range days, ladies' days. Yeah. We're trying to build more hunters, more PAL owners, more firearm owners, more PAL holders. And because if you have more stakeholders, you have more people that have something to lose from a government that's unfriendly to law-abiding licensed gun owners, then that's going to affect their numbers, as well as still continuing to represent licensed gun owners as reasonable, good people on mainstream media, because there still is an audience there, which we found out in this election. And I have a whole list of other things. I'm not going to bore you with them, but we actually have still a lot of work to do to either prevent any new programs from coming out, to react to new programs should they come out from the liberals, and also represent gun owners at whatever table there is to engage in negotiation. So,
yep. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess if there's any silver lining at all, it is kind of refreshing to be returning back to those original roots where, you know, the intention was always to be nonpartisan. But the way we were treated as gun owners, of course, changed the direction. So I don't know. We'll see. It's a new leader. It'll be a new parliament, new members on the committees. Like, everything will be different that way. So we'll see what happens. But yeah.
So anyway, I think getting back to this, to the, you know, what about our new reality? You know, should we be panicking? All the rest of that stuff. We kind of touched on it when we first started talking, but this is a minority government. At least at this point, they do not have a majority. You know, if the only way they would get a majority of people cross the floor, not sure, you know, the bloc's not going to cross the floor. And then the NDP, if anyone crosses the floor, it's over for their party. So I don't know. Who knows? So minority governments typically don't go 4 years. And we also don't know what priority a buyback or anything is going to be in this government. Because if you remember, Wilson, because you and I were talking about it during the campaign, like gun control came up like twice. Other than that, they ignored gun control entirely.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you'll remember back when Prime Minister Carney was introducing Natalie Provost, one of their star candidates. He, you know, he got the name of the school wrong. He got her name wrong. Like, this is not a priority to this guy. You know, I know he'll have some internal pressure from his new MP, but I think at the same time, he may enjoy being prime minister and want it to last a little longer. And if his idea is to reduce the hate and division and to really focus on the economic matters, spending billions of taxpayer dollars on a wasteful, useless, expensive gun grab is not the way to go. So,
well, and alienating two and a half million Canadians, right? Just to satisfy the ideological obsessions of a handful of people within the liberal, you know, orbit. Like, I don't know if he'll go for it, because he's not weak like Trudeau was, like that.
No, it's not the same guy that way.
It isn't. Yeah. And it's not like I'm advertising for him or advocating for him. He's just a different guy, and he's not someone that shies away from leadership. So I don't know. We'll see. Again, could be totally wrong. Could be everything that we may have thought before. It's just a different version of the same program. But, you know, at least during the campaign, it wasn't. You know, he could have just stuck with all kinds of crazy ideological things that were working for Trudeau, but he didn't. He's just like, yeah.
No, he didn't.
I'm not doing that.
So
just interesting.
I mean, at the end of the day, we have no choice but to march forward with that attitude. Because like I said, the other option is to just throw up our hands and give up. And I'm not doing that. And I know you're not either. So. Absolutely. Hopefully everyone sticks with us, and we're going to keep kicking that can around. So
that's right. Okay. So, we're going to move on from all that stuff because we're going to be revisiting this, you know, in each podcast, because things are going to change dramatically. Even when I was after the election, when I was like, oh, what now? Like, do we even exist after this? I went from that to where we are now in 2 days.
Yeah.
But you know, you got to keep going, and there's still a ton of work to do. So, and we're going to be able to do it for as long as gun owners are supporting us as well, right? So, if we're still an organization that has the resources to do big things, we'll continue to do big things. So it's not over yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also want to thank a lot of people just before we move on from politics stuff. I know that we did a huge Get Out the Vote campaign on all kinds of platforms, and you know, you and I hammered it to death. So I want to thank the people who did that, people who talked to and influenced their circle of people, got people out to vote. If they went out and vote, if they volunteered for a campaign, people made content on social media, they went to rallies and events. Like, this was, it felt like more than an election. It was sort of like a movement. And I really want to thank people for doing that. You know, and now we've all kind of had a taste of that. And I think that we'll do it even better next time. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And like we said, sort of in the beginning of this conversation, people that are pessimistic about the performance of the Conservative Party, you really don't have that much reason to be pessimistic. You know, they grew their voting base by 7%. And in times like this, where things are so polarized, like it's impressive. They did a fairly good job. It wasn't enough to get us over the finish line. But I think this was all good, because the people that didn't rally people, the people that didn't go out and get their four people and drag them to the polls before, that did this time, they're going to do it again.
Yeah,
so,
they will.
You know, the next time that we get a shot at this, it's going to be even better than it was. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's there's a lot to be optimistic about, really.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. You have one story before we get to the rest of the stuff. Oh. About a gentleman who scraped up a donation and sent it to the CCFR, and it's such a great story.
Yeah, this was really cute, actually. And he sent a handwritten letter addressed to you. So I opened it on your behalf, and I hope that was okay. Yes, I did.
That's a federal offense.
So this is from our good friend Mark Anderson from the Powder Keg Shooter Supply in Kamloops, BC. And he sent a letter saying he's, you know, been in business for 40 years. So it's a good old family-owned gun shop. And he decided, rather than just giving out the calendars that the store makes, that he would accept donations for us in exchange for these calendars. And he's been doing that. And he actually raised $1,080. And he enclosed a check for that amount and he mailed it to you. So Mark Anderson at the Powder Keg, thank you so, so much. It's super meaningful. And if you're in the Kamloops area, stop by the store and tell them that Rod and I sent you.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Yeah. And we really appreciate that help.
Yes.
So speaking of that, we have a ton of donations here. And again, if you've sent a donation to the CCFR and it was, you know, whatever, 2 months ago or something like that, you haven't heard anything, just let us know. It's really hard to keep track of this stuff because sometimes donations come via check. Sometimes they're e-transferred. Sometimes we're presented with a check and they want pictures at an event. Like, it's just, it comes in from different places and we don't always have all of that straight. But anyway, I just want to mention, what happened to my glasses? Hang on.
Getting old, Giltaka.
I don't know how they got on the floor. Okay.
You threw them. That's it.
So I want to mention some of these great donations. So the Alberta Arms and Cartridge Collectors Association donated $5,000. That's from the Calgary Easter Gun Show. Really appreciate that. That's not the first time they donated. I think they've donated four times.
Yeah,
if a lot. This is the fourth time. So I really appreciate that help. The Ajax Rod and Gun Club, this just came in, another $5,000. Thank you, guys. Buffalo Target Shooters Association in Alberta, really supportive of the CCFR. Really appreciate that. They donated $5,000. Club de Tirville Saint-Pierre in Quebec.
Your French is beautiful.
Yeah, you could almost believe that I could speak French or not. They sent a great donation in as well. Nipissing Rifle and Revolver Club, Courtney mm-hmm. District Fish and Game Protective Association. I think I might have said that one before, but just in case. Vernon Fish and Game Club, thank you guys. Terrace Rod and Gun Club, St. Paul Fish and Game Association, some individuals, Dale, Ian, Lee, and Steve and Rita, and Josh from Dirty Leather. I think we talked about him before, though. All personal donations, thanks so much, and sizable donations. Really appreciate the help, guys. The Tavistock and District Rod and Gun Club. I feel like I said them before, but just in case. The Dysart Gun Club, Rat Rivers Outdoors, Peterborough Revolver and Pistol Club, Dave Fisher from the Alberta Riflemen's Association. They donated $1,000, so really appreciate that. And also a special mention for Sean Alexander from Kailani Sports. Sean is always trying to find ways to help the CCFR. Just a great supporter. Really appreciate all his help. He donated $1,000 cooler package to be raffled off at a Ducks Unlimited event on behalf of the CCFR. So really appreciate all the help. And if I miss anyone, like I said, just bring it to our attention and I'll get it in the next podcast. So thank you all so much for all your help.
Yeah, we can't do all that big stuff that we do without all that big help. So just incredible.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing I wanted to mention is, I think we talked about it in another podcast, probably the last one, but the CCFR as an organization did a bunch of stuff, and we'll do a quick review just so that people don't forget, you know, they're not wondering why, you know, we spent $400,000 in this election, which is, I think, is unprecedented in the history of Canada for a gun crazy. Group. And how we spent it is important. But you personally did a ton of work, like feet on the street work, Like, I had my own stuff to do, but you went above and beyond. So just from me to you, I want to thank you for that effort. And I just want people to understand the types of activities you were engaged in. Thus, they understand how you can contribute to a national or a federal election campaign.
Well, thank you and the CCFR and all our supporters for giving me the opportunity to not be fired while I'm running around volunteering. So that was actually really important. And I'll say this was new to me because I do a lot of politics stuff, as you know, we both do. But in the previous two election campaigns, we had the in 2021, we did the election pamphlets. So basically, I spent 16 days running around in a U-Haul delivering a 250,000 pamphlets across the GTA. In 2019, you and I jumped in that Liberal failure bus with Colin and went across the country. So I haven't had the opportunity to actually work a campaign before. So I've spent the last 5 weeks volunteering for our local candidate and literally learning every single thing there is to learn about a campaign and then doing it, right from loading and unloading and building an entire campaign office. And it's crazy. In a matter of 6 hours, it went from an empty space to like a buzzing, busy office with computers and maps on the wall and charts everywhere. I door knocked over 800 doors. I did 4 days of get out the vote, which is still door knocking, but it's targeting actual identified supporters. So it's a ton of driving. Like, I think I put 400 kilometers on my car in 2 days, just driving around neighborhoods from door to door. Colin and I installed over 600 lawn signs. He's actually out right now uninstalling the large arterial signs that go out along the highways and the big roads. And yeah, just spent 5 weeks doing that. It was absolutely nuts. And then, of course, helped plan and execute our watch party at a local small business. So the other thing we did just literal days before the election was we wanted to sort of weaponize our people, so to speak. In other words, we have influencers within our community, whether they're people who shoot IPSC or hunters, they've got large social media followings. And I watched this great video from Brad Wall that he did kind of, it was just one of those, you know, impromptu organic videos where he just sort of sat down and talked for 2 minutes, explained why he's voting conservative and why you should too. And I probably reached out to about 40 different people within our community. And I got probably a dozen of them to make these get out the vote videos. And I just wanted to give a special mention. This was 3 days before the end of the campaign. But from IPSC, we had Tuna Corey Lawrenson, Melody Phil, Little Rockstar, and Nicole Nessifer. They did beautiful videos. Even Jim Shockey, I reached out to him. He didn't respond to me, but I could see that he saw it. And he did do a video. So I'm really grateful. And then I did one as well. And a bunch of other people. I can't mention everybody. But yeah, it's been an absolute grind. And I have so much respect for the volunteers that run these campaigns. You know, there's over 1,900 candidates across the country altogether. And you think each one of them has a massive team of volunteers. Like, there are tens of thousands of people grinding away, working for free, doing actual hard boots to the ground work. So yeah, I should have added up my steps like I did in the last election campaigns, but I think I probably beat it. So
yeah,
just a wild 5 weeks. I'm literally physically exhausted, but yeah, it was just incredible to take part in.
Yeah. Well, and you learn a lot. And
I did.
This is also the reason why we talked about it is people can understand what it is they can actually do to help next time.
Yeah. So there's a lot. Like, we had people sitting in there just folding pamphlets. Maybe they didn't want to talk to people. Maybe they didn't want to door knock and have to engage with people, but you can drop literature in mailboxes or, you know, the door hangers on the door, on people's doors. There's something for everybody. And it for me, it felt good to just participate in that because I was worried, right? We're watching the polling and the sliding in the polls. And, you know, I couldn't just sit home and doom scroll that. The best kind of therapy was just to get out and do everything I can to try and do my part. And regardless of the outcome, I love that experience. I love the team that we worked with. And I'm really grateful to learn a lot. I think I know a lot of stuff sometimes, and it's a little bit humbling to learn from these people who have been doing it for decades. So yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Well, while you were doing that, I was doing the our Get Out the Vote campaign, our attack ad campaign, as well as our social media guys, Brandon and Silas. We're getting
yeah,
all
they
that.
Killed it.
Yeah, they Amazing. Were killing it too over the election. The whole team, everybody pulled together and took whatever task we needed to do. But just as a reminder, what we did as an organization, we didn't tell people that we're just, you know, we're fighting like mad for the election, whatever, and send money. We actually, what we did was, we did, I did six ads, Get Out the Vote ads that were 30 or 15 seconds each, which were shown on WOW TV in every single television show they had around the clock, 24 hours a day, for just shy of a month before, before 2 days before the election, because there's a blackout period there and we didn't want to get close to that. But that was a huge expense. It was a bit of work, and I made six different ads so that they wouldn't be the same. The message was sort of the same, but slightly different, so people didn't get annoyed with it, which I'm sure they got annoyed anyway. We did that on WOW TV. We did that on Sportsman Channel. And then we did attack ads, and we dropped, I don't know, something just shy maybe of $300,000. We have to do our audited final return for Elections Canada as a third party advertiser. And I'll know exactly what those numbers are then. So we did that, including ads during the Stanley Cup playoffs and all the evening news on Global CTV and Rogers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and Chorus Entertainment as well. So anyway, all the nightly news, the only people we didn't do was CBC, because they were super expensive for a small audience. And they didn't even respond to us till halfway through April. So
yeah, that's right.
Make of
we
that what you will.
Social media ads.
Yeah, apparently they don't need any money.
No.
But anyway, make of that what you will. And we also did social media advertising on X, on LinkedIn, and some other platforms as well. You'll see all that in our edited final return. So if you want to know what everyone spent or whether or not they participated in the election at all, you can actually go to Elections Canada. If you look at the far right of the main page that you go to, there'll be like other stuff. So you click that. And then you go down to political financing and returns. You see this, I'm saying this without seeing the website, but I'm showing it now. And then you can look at everyone who registered and how much they spent. So look down that list, you'll see the CCFR, you'll see our first two interim returns, which are difficult to do because you're in the process of spending money when you're doing that. And then you'll see the final return. It has to be audited by an accounting firm. So probably within a month or two, and you'll see our final numbers. But even just with those two expense reports, it's 310,000, I think, something like that, 320 or something.
Yeah.
So anyway, if we want to continue to do big things like that, obviously we need your support in the future. But throughout the campaign, we didn't really fundraise. I think we sent one email. So anyway, we would like to think that we made a big difference. And
I think
about everything that we did. I think we probably did. I think we made a noticeable difference, especially the Get Out the Vote campaign on the outdoor networks. That was a big one.
Yeah. That people say, oh, that's preaching to the choir. That's right. That's the point.
Yeah.
We want to get gun owners and hunters and casual gun owners and their families, friends, and networks out to the voting booths, right? That's the entire point.
Yeah. The choir stays the choir home to get them more to often than not.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, yeah. You know, they were polling super high. They'll be fine. I'm tired. I don't need to go to the polls. No, everybody needed to. And again, the showing for the Conservatives was the strongest since 1980. But, you know, now we know how to do it, right? And when I say we, I mean everyone who's like, yeah, I went and I got four people, or I got eight people, or I just got two people. I dragged them to the polls myself in my own car. And then we went out for a beer after I bought them dinner. Now you know how to do this. The next time, it won't be anywhere near as hard, because you probably experienced this, went to the polls, voted, took people, and you're like, you know what? That wasn't a whole lot of effort for such a consequential aspect of my life, for something that has such a huge effect on my standard of living, you know? So anyway, all right.
Yeah.
As far as all those things I just mentioned that the CCFR did, one of the things I'm going to do in the next couple of weeks is I'm going to update our Why Join page. So as you know, if you go to our main website and you click Why Join, you'll see the big list of everything that we've done, because we never, you know, fundraise on rhetoric. We fundraise on action. So if you look right down at the bottom of the list, I'll add all this stuff that we just talked about probably in the next couple of weeks. I got a little bit of travel to do, but yeah, that's a long short of all this, Ms. Wilson.
Yeah. Like, dude, it has been an absolute grind. And again, I'm not happy with the outcome, but I'm happy it's over. At least now we know where we stand and we move forward in the battle space that's in front of us, and that's it. So, yeah. So next time I want to hear a better Wilson.
Yeah, you will. I'll get there. Still, you know, we're recording this 48 hours after the election. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm over it. I'm ready.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the update, and we will see you in the next one.
All right. We'll see you then.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for episode 188 of the CCFR Radio podcast. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much for your support. Appreciate that as well. The CCFR still has a lot of work to do because it's not all lost yet. There are some moving parts which we need to consider, and I think the reality is going to change one way or the other in real time within the coming weeks, I think. I think things are going to look a lot different than they look for us right now, 2, 3, 4 weeks from now. So, and as things change, we're going to get a lot more information, a lot more answers to what things are going to look like, which will allow us to react in the appropriate manner. So we are not finished fighting yet. There still is a fight to fight. You know, we're not, you know, scratching around looking for things to do. There's a lot of work still to do. So we will fight right down to the last minute. Anyway, again, thanks everyone for tuning in. Make sure that you watch the next episode, because we're going to know a lot more than we know today about our situation. So thanks for watching. As I said, take care. We'll see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.